As a child in the late 1970s, Kevin Dykes accidentally killed his best friend when they were playing with a gun, sending him to juvie for involuntary manslaughter. When he got out, he turned to petty drug dealing in Compton, California. Fast forward to 1986. After a terrible assault that led to a four-month hospital stint, Kevin continued peddling drugs from his temporary wheelchair for two men named Slim and Hondo. Kevin rented a bed and a trailer home in his landlord's driveway, where Slim and Hondo occasionally hid weapons. That June, two incidents occurred just days apart, resulting in one murder and two attempted murders. The first during a party when Kevin booted his friend Ephraim for being belligerently drunk, Slim and Hondo followed Ephraim, stabbing him several times. A neighborhood mother, Mrs. Bradley, came to Ephraim's aid, only to get stabbed as well. Kevin intervened, jumping from his wheelchair to stop the assault before it turned fatal. A few days later, Slim and Hondo accused Kevin's friend, Otis Perry, of stealing their gun from Kevin's trailer home, stabbing him 81 times. Unable to stop the murderous frenzy and fearing for his own life, Kevin helped them clean up before going to the police a few hours later. A few days after that, Kevin was arrested for cocaine possession and put into a special holding tank for state's witnesses. Then, three jailhouse snitches claimed that Kevin had confessed to all three attacks in exchange for leniency in their own cases. Kevin Dykes is serving life in prison on the word of three notorious jailhouse snitches. This is Wrongful Conviction with Jason Flom.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
This is Global Tel Link. You have a prepaid call from
Jim,
an inmate at the California State Prison, Los Angeles County, Lancaster, California. This call and your telephone number will be monitored and recorded. To accept this call, say or dial 5 now. Thank you for using Global Tel Link.
Welcome back to Wrongful Conviction with Jason Flom. Today we have an incredible story, so we're going to get right into it, and I'm going to introduce you first to Stephen K. Hauser. He's a criminal defense attorney representing the star of this episode, Kevin Dykes. Stephen, welcome to Wrongful Conviction.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And Kevin Dykes is on the phone with us from prison, and I hope we'll be able to do something about his situation because it is awful. Kevin, I'm sorry you're here or where you are, but I'm happy you're here with us today, so thank you for being here.
No problem. Thank you for the opportunity.
This case goes back to Compton 1986, and it's got It's got so much that you'll think I'm talking about a movie script that would be too much to be believed, except for it's real. It's got gangsters named Hondo and Slim. It's got drugs. It's got snitches that ended up on 60 Minutes. It's got laws that changed and victims who testified that this was not the guy who did it. It's got a guy who's in prison for 3.5 decades with no evidence against him, except the testimony of jailhouse snitches who have recanted their testimony. It is nuts, but it's true. So let's get right into it. And Kevin, let's start with you going back to your youth, because you grew up in Compton, right?
Yes. I grew up good two-parent home, in the Pop Warner sports. I actually had a real good upbringing until I think it was 1978. I ended up actually killing my best friend. I went for involuntary manslaughter, and I was sent to YA.
And for those of you who don't know, YA or CYA is the California Youth Authority.
As I understand it, your friend's death was entirely accidental, just two kids who made a big mistake playing with a gun. But they still sent you away to juvie for involuntary manslaughter. And I also understand that you harbor a lot of guilt about this, even though the family forgave you.
Yes. His family, they stayed directly across the street from my family. Even to this day, they still stay on the same street. Although the family had forgiven me, written me letters, and was coming to see me, when I got out, I saw what I did to that family. And I didn't know how to process. Although my mother, my father, my grandmother, and all kinds of people were trying to help me, I didn't know how to ask for the help that I actually needed. So I got deeper into drugs, deeper into the gang stuff.
So the guilt kind of derailed your potential, it seems. And after juvie, you start dealing drugs and looking outside of what seemed like a supportive home for whatever it was that you felt you needed, acceptance, identity, whatever, out in the street. So fast forward to January 1986, some other really bad stuff happens.
January 18th, somebody tried to kidnap me. They tried to kidnap me in front of my house. I fought them. They ran me through a brick wall. They broke my hip and smashed my pelvis. So I went to the hospital January 18th all the way to May 20th. When I got out of the hospital, I was in a wheelchair and I had a walker, and I was going to do therapy.
Yes, someone tried to kidnap Kevin. So you fought them off, and they ended up hitting you with their car against a brick wall, broke your hip, snapped your pelvis, and put you in the hospital for 4 months. I mean, you're lucky to even be alive, and we haven't even gotten to the part that has you locked up right now. Okay, so it's May 1986. You're temporarily in this wheelchair doing physical therapy and dealing drugs for these two mid-level management drug dealers named Slim and Hondo.
Slim and Hondo decided that they were going to take over the local drug sales. I believe they helped Kevin and some of his friends with small amounts of cocaine to sell in the neighborhood. And they would periodically show up and, I guess, resupply the local sellers, including Kevin.
And Kevin, you were renting a place to stay from a man named Mr. Bryce. You were renting a bed in this mobile home that sat in his driveway, right?
Yes. I was staying in Mr. Bright's mobile home. He had a mobile home that had like 6 beds, you know, an oven, a shower, had all that stuff inside. It was parked in the driveway. Sometimes my friends used to place to stay. It had like 6 places where you could sleep in there. So Otis would come in and sleep in there.
And Otis is Otis Perry, who occasionally stayed at Mr. Bryce's mobile home. And he's the one that was eventually stabbed by Slim and Hondo for taking the gun that they had left in the trailer the night that these two attempted murders occurred outside a party at Mr. Bryce's house.
Yes. Otis and my cousin Pam was inside the mobile home. I was inside the house where the party was at when the fight happened. So I didn't know Otis was out there at the time. And I know Slim pulled up. They knew Mr. Bryce didn't allow guns in his house. So they hid a gun in the mobile home with my cousin and Otis there. But I still didn't know nothing about that at that time.
Okay, so now the stage is finally set for these crimes to take place. We're talking June 19th, 1986. There's a little party going on at Mr. Bryce's. Your friend Otis and your cousin Pam are in the mobile home in the driveway. Slim and Hondo, your bosses, come to hang out. But out of respect for Mr. Bryce, they leave their gun in the mobile home. Then your friend Ephraim is at the party, and he is drunk, to say the least.
Well, Ephraim is my older homeboy. He was drunk, being belligerent, and messing with the females that was up in there, grabbing drinks that didn't belong to him. And I told Ephraim, man, go down to the pool, man, kick back. I got him. And he kept on, so I got pissed off, and I hit him once. And when I hit him, Hondo and Slim, both of them attacked him because of my... Here's what they said, because I didn't understand why did they get involved in that. Here's what they said. Because I could barely walk, they people were taking advantage of my disability.
Ah, okay. So your drug bosses are sticking up for you, but then they go way beyond what you would ever want them to do.
Yes. So once I struck Ethan, both of them attacked him. I got them to stop, told Ethan to leave. He left, and then they chased him down the street. They caught him at the end of the corner. Once I got down there, I saw that they were actually stabbing me. When I hollered, Hondo, leave him alone, Hondo. He looked up and saw me. But when he saw me, he saw Miss Bradley behind me. Miss Bradley is my older homeboy's mother. When she looked up and saw that it wasn't her son, she tried to turn and run. He ran her down, grabbed her by her dress, and started stabbing her. I hopped my way to him and grabbed him to get him off of her. And once I was holding him, she got loose, which gave me some time to get up. And then I got to convince them to get into the car and drove them off. I drove them off to a motel, and then I came back to check on Ephraim and Miss Bradley, but the ambulance already came and they went to the hospital.
So you basically saved Mrs. Bradley and Ephraim from being murdered by Slim and Hondo by convincing them to stop stabbing them and drive away from the scene. But this incident on June 19th is what becomes two charges of attempted murder that gets stuck on you, the guy confined to a wheelchair at the time. yeah, okay. So Slim and Hondo stabbed both Ephraim and Mrs. Bradley. You drove them to a motel. At some point, your friend Otis, back at the mobile home, takes the gun Slim and Hondo had left behind. Not too smart, by the way, because Slim and Hondo knew who was in the mobile home when they stashed it in the first place. So they come looking for Otis on June 23rd.
June 23rd, he came over looking for Otis. It's like 1 something in the morning. He said, come outside. I'm going to go and kill Otis. I didn't know Otis was out here in the motorhome. So when I went out to the front yard, door to the motorhome opened. Otis stepped out. Hondo attacked Otis. He made with my gun at. He said, we can go get it. He said, too late. And they attacked him. They started fighting. Otis was fighting back. So they were fighting him from the side of the motorhome. He went around the garage. That was the first time I saw him being stabbed. Then I came back from around there. I wasn't able to run or whatever, so I didn't say nothing. And just listened to everything that was going on. And then, I don't know how much time passed, but then Arnold's came from around there. There was no more noise. I was wondering, okay, now what? He said, what's up? You got some rest for me? And then I gave him my blanket. So him and Slim went behind the thing and wrapped him up, drug him out, and put him in the car. And then instead of him and Slim going, he said, you Slim, you stay here, watch out on the blood that was coming from behind the mobile home, and told me to get in the car and ride with him. So I took him over to my homeboy's neighborhood by the canal, and that's where he dumped him. And I said, look, I'll be back. I left and never came back.
And what would you tell anyone listening now who's wondering why you played any part in getting rid of the body with Slim and Hondo?
I did what any reasonable person not trying to die would have done after seeing what I saw. I knew I got to do something to make myself a part of what's going on. And I wasn't physically able to do nothing to prevent myself from being killed. And I like to stress that. That was the smartest thing that I could have done at the time for myself, instead of doing nothing.
If you had done nothing at all, what do you think Slim and Hondo would have done?
I was a little bit too afraid to find out. I was in a position where something happened to my friend, and Hondo needed to know where I stood. And I did what I thought was the best thing to do for myself. Nothing I could do for others. Now it's about saving myself.
This episode is sponsored by AIG, a leading global insurance company, and Paul Weiss, Rifkin, Wharton, and Garrison, a leading international law firm. The AIG Pro Bono program provides free legal services and other support to many nonprofit organizations and individuals most in need. And recently, they announced that working to reform the criminal justice system will become a key pillar of the program's mission. Paul Weiss has long had an unwavering commitment to providing impactful pro bono legal assistance to the most vulnerable members of our society and in support of the public interest, including extensive work in the criminal justice area. Otis's murder eventually gets pinned on you, the guy who was only able to watch or listen helplessly as your friend got stabbed to death. And then, in order to save your own life, you did what probably any of us would have done. You played along with Slim and Hondo until you could get away. I would not want to have been in your shoes at that point. You just lost your friend Otis. You had to contend with the question of to snitch or not to snitch on, like, a Sophie's Choice on these two murderous drug dealers.
That's when I was trying to process what had just happened. And so 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning, that's when I saw the police. And I told them that I think I know who that was. When they said, come over here, look, they moved the blanket. I knew it was. I said, I know where he lives. I took him to his mother's house. And then when we came back to the scene, I asked him, I said, look, if I had any information, how could I contact you? And he gave me his card. I took the card, rolled around more hours, and then I went to the phone booth, and then I called the police and look, and I told them everything that they need to know, and told them where I was at. They came and picked me up, took me out to the station, and I made the tape. And then once I made the tape, they let me go. I went back home.
So you made a statement to a sergeant, Sergeant Preston, and you're going to be a witness. And Steve, maybe you can tell us about the next part of this story, which is how Kevin was picked up for cocaine possession sometime later. And while in the state's witness holding area of L.A. County Jail, he eventually meets three guys who are responsible for him being in this horrible predicament today.
What happened was Kevin got arrested for a possession of cocaine charge. And because he was the main witness against Slim and Hondo on a murder case, they put him in with other prosecution witnesses. And it's commonly called the snitch tank, which is a separate jail from the men's central jail. And while Kevin was in there, he told his cellmate, Willie Battle, and the guy that was in the next cell over, Jesse Williams, he told them what actually happened. Because they asked, and that's very common in jail, what are you in for? And they exchange information, but this time it only came from Kevin. He told them what happened. And they twisted it around and ran with it. And then they called the Compton Police Department and asked them if they had a murder case where the body was found by a canal. They called it a canal. It's really a drainage ditch. And they put him in contact with Detective Marvin Branscombe, who was not Sergeant Preston, who Kevin gave the statement to. And they convinced Branscombe that what they had to say was true, which they said that Kevin confessed to these attempted murders and murder.
They say, hey, we got a guy down here bragging about killing this guy and stabbing this lady and his other, telling me he's a big-time dope dealer. So I end up going from being the actual witness to now being the actual killer.
So Kevin became a defendant instead of the prosecution witness. And they moved him out of the snitch tank to another part of the jail. So Kevin's transferred over to the central jail. And then he met a very notorious snitch named Leslie White. And I get a call from Leslie White. I'd never heard of Leslie White. Leslie White says, I understand you're defending Kevin Dykes and that he has been ratted out by two snitches. And I said, that's exactly right. He says, well, I can help you. You come down here and I'm going to tell you all about the snitch system and how it works. Okay. So I go down to the jail. I talk to Leslie White. He tells me about how inmates get a hold of paperwork and change facts and get a hold of the detective or DA that's handling a particular murder case. And because they know these unique facts, they can convince the detective or district attorney that's handling the case that this confession was a valid confession. So I said, well, that sounds good. Okay, I'll put you on the witness list, Mr. White. So about a week or two later, I get the witness list from the district attorney, and Leslie White is on there as a people's witness. And not only that, I get a report that says that Kevin Dykes confessed to Leslie White. And I'm flabbergasted because I just talked to Leslie White and he was going to be a witness for Kevin. So I go down to the jail and I call out Leslie White and he's willing to come and talk to me. And I said, "What are you a witness for the prosecution now?" He says, "Yep." I said, "Well, you know that Kevin's innocent. Why are you doing what? How can you do that?" And he says, "Well, man's got to do what he's got to do." That's what he said.
I got to be honest, my head is spinning and I didn't even live through this. I mean, this is Kevin. I mean, I'm so sorry that you're living. This is your life we're talking about.
I didn't actually believe that what was going on was even possible. I didn't think that this stuff would hold. I'm like, what? Hold up. I'm an actual eyewitness. These guys, they don't know nothing about where I live or nothing about what actually happened. So I didn't really believe the people could do what they were doing to me. I had never even heard about that before.
I mean, this is like nothing. I don't think we've ever heard a story like this before. So, Stephen, what happens next?
When we got to court, all they had was his statement to Sergeant Preston and three snitches. And I couldn't believe that they would even want to proceed with this evidence. But they did. And just before the verdict was issued, I told Kevin, I said, "Now, Kevin, when you get out of here, you've got to change your ways. Be a law-abiding citizen and a use to society." And he said, "Yeah, okay, Mr. Hauser, I'm going to do that." Came back guilty. We were both floored.
You were sentenced to 24 years to life. Here it is now, 2020, you're still in. Can you just take us back there? Put us in that courtroom with you, if you can.
I actually could not believe the verdict. You know, I actually ended up crying. I didn't see how it was possible. Yeah, I was an actual eyewitness. I came forward. I gave them everything they needed, all the evidence, the car, the weapons, the people. Ephraim testified that I didn't attack him. Ephraim was stabbed like 33 times. And he testified that I didn't attack him. And testified that I didn't attack Miss Bradley. That was my friend's mother. There was nobody there that said I attacked anybody but the snitches.
And this is something I really need to highlight here, which is that if you go in a jury box and you're presented with a case where someone's life is hanging in the balance, just like Kevin's was, and there's no evidence connecting that person to the crime except for the testimony of a snitch, you cannot vote to convict because it's crazy. I mean, these are people who are clearly incentivized. They may not tell you that at the time, but you have to understand that the defense can never bribe a witness. That's a crime punishable by a long time in jail. But the government can make a deal with a snitch to reduce their charges or drop their charges in exchange for testimony. And that is the best bribe of all. So it's the most unreliable testimony imaginable. And here you have a case where the direct evidence contradicts what the snitches were saying. The evidence showed that Kevin could not have committed this crime, and yet he ends up getting convicted on the testimony of people who were notoriously untrustworthy and were incentivized to lie.
Mr. Holler found evidence where they get apartments. They say, "Oh, he threatened my family." So the government gives them money to relocate them, move them in apartments. All of them end up getting reduced sentences. Leslie White end up getting out after testifying against me. I don't know if you remember this, Mr. Howard. He came right back, and then he threatened the district attorney if you don't let me back out, I'm going to blow this whole case up. You remember that, Miss Allen?
What happened was Leslie White then went on 60 Minutes when he was back in again in the jail, and he showed on camera how he could work his magic and get favors from DA. And then when I saw that, I went down and talked to Leslie White. I said, well, now I know for sure you lied in Kevin's case. And he said, yeah, I did. And I said, well, I want you to sign an affidavit that you lied in Kevin's case because Kevin deserves a new trial. And so, sure enough, he signed it. But instead of giving Kevin a new trial, the DA indicted him. Leslie White, with the grand jury, had me come in and testify. And they gave Leslie White 4 years for perjury. They gave Kevin Dykes nothing. And that's where it sat.
It's all so backwards and upside down. And of course, you know, we have two more characters that are coming up. Gigi Gordon, who's on the right side of this story, and Willie Battles. We can't leave him out.
Yeah, when this snitch system came out, thanks to Leslie White, believe it or not, Gigi Gordon was appointed. She's a defense lawyer. She's deceased now, but she was a criminal defense lawyer, friend of mine. And Gigi Gordon was appointed by, I think, the Supreme Court to do an independent investigation on all of the snitch cases to see if justice was done. And she spent over a year on this project being paid by the state of California. And as a result of Gigi Gordon's research and investigation, a law was introduced in the legislature to require corroboration if snitch testimony is going to be used in a case. And that happened.
But they didn't do it retroactively. Am I getting that right? Because it always drives me nuts when we change a law in this country and we don't do it retroactively. How could it be different now than it was before? It doesn't make sense.
Didn't make any sense to me. That's why I appealed it. We went to the appellate court in California, then the Supreme Court. And actually, when we went to the Supreme Court the first time, the law had not been changed yet. But then we went back to the Supreme Court on another issue, and the law had been changed. And in federal court, the judge actually said that Kevin might be innocent, but there's nothing I can do because this law is not retroactive, or something to that effect. And I just thought that that was the most unjust result I've ever had in my whole career. Still is.
Wow.
And so if Kevin's case were tried now, they wouldn't have any evidence against him, because the only incriminating evidence was from the snitch testimony.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow the Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
If Kevin's case were to be tried now, they would have no evidence against him. And yet, it's 34 years later, and he's... This is nuts.
I went to the district attorney with that very argument. With each new district attorney that came in, I would go talk to him, and they told me that because of his statement admitting what he did, pretending to go along with what Slim and Hondo were doing, because of that statement, that made him guilty. And they said, sorry, you have to present new evidence to us before we're going to recommend anything for Kevin. And I said, what's the matter with these confessions by these snitches? That's new evidence, at least since the trial. Two out of three. Leslie White signed an affidavit that sent him, put himself in prison. And Jesse Williams signed a letter saying that he lied in Kevin's case. They said, no, we want some more than that. Plus, you've got one snitch that you don't have, you know, retraction from, Willie Battle. We never had a retraction from him. And Willie Battle, I tried to find, but he's probably dead. So that's where we sit.
And what is the outlook now? I mean, is there hope?
I think Kevin has two hopes. Number one, with a new DA, I think Gascon is much more progressive than Jackie Lacey. I thought Jackie Lacey was very progressive. And I had high hopes for Kevin when she put together her internal innocence project. And I met with what I thought was a very ethical, fine lawyer. And I got a very unfavorable result. And I asked him during that hearing, I said, you know, as a human being, you know, do you really think that Kevin Dykes was convicted properly, fairly? He wouldn't answer. He wouldn't give me an answer. That was the guy in charge of Jackie Lacey's internal innocence project.
And in case people think there's not enough here already, we have a case where the victim's family doesn't hold Kevin responsible. I think anybody coming out of, you know, high school would look at this and go, okay, well, this guy's innocent. Let's get him home. But the way the laws are set up, it's really, really difficult, even in a case like this with so much compelling evidence of not just reasonable doubt, but evidence of actual innocence. And now the next step really, and luckily we have a great governor, my opinion, of course, the great governor of the state of California, Gavin Newsom. What is the process for trying to get this on his desk?
The law in California is that if you've done state prison time, you have to go to the Supreme Court before you can petition the governor on a different case. Because of that prior conviction for involuntary manslaughter, Kevin can't go to the governor's office, or I can't go on his behalf to the governor. You have to petition the Supreme Court and get permission from them to ask the governor for a pardon or clemency. And in the years past, we've had a pretty conservative Supreme Court, which is different now, but might as well try that if there's nothing else.
That is a strange thing in the law, too, in California. It's not the first time I've encountered it where it has to, you know, the underlying previous conviction stands in the way of even the governor taking an action, because I believe if he knew about this case, he would want to.
But I think the best thing to do is to hope for parole, hope that the DA does not oppose parole. Kevin comes up for parole, I think, in another year or two.
December 13th next year.
Yeah. Okay.
Wow.
But even better is to have the new DA take a look at this case and admit that Kevin was wrongfully convicted.
Kevin, what would you like people to do or to know?
Well, I know I did the right thing when I went to the police. Had nothing to hide. I told the proof in. I told the proof in front of the jury. Even now, I don't regret doing the right thing because it was my friend's life. And it was important for his mother to know the truth. What happened to her son? I would do the same thing again. I would still go through the police. I was still serving food. Maybe I wouldn't say that while I'm in jail. It cost me a lot. I've lost like 17 family members. My mom had a stroke a few years ago. And it cost me a lot, but I was still doing it, even after all this time.
In all this time in prison, have there been any like moments of little rays of light that poked their head into such a dark place? And was there a particular moment where you almost lost hope, sort of a darkest moment for you?
I found the Lord in the last 5 years, so I'm at peace finally with God and myself. So now it's like, you know what? There's nothing I can do about what they've done. I'm not going to let them take what's left that I got in my spirit. And now my family is proud of me, even though I've never done nothing because I've changed my life. So, yeah, it's been dark times, trust me, a lot. But I'm going to keep pushing. I'm going to keep believing. I got to. It's all I got.
I mean, I'm just sitting here with a heavy sort of knot in my stomach, just the fact that, I mean, you're a 59-year-old man. You spent almost twice as long in prison as you were free. You're no threat to society. This is what the parole board is for. You know, this man needs to go home. I'm going to stay optimistic, and I'm going to tell you we're going to do everything we can. And I feel like society owes you a debt and an apology. And all we can do is bring as much attention as we can and trying to bring this to the attention of the people who can make a difference in this case, try to make it right. All right, so we have a very special section or segment of this show that's my favorite part, and this is what we call closing arguments. I, first of all, thank you both. So first of all, Stephen K. Hauser, attorney, thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you. It's a privilege.
And Kevin Dykes, what can I say, man? You are an inspiring guy. From what little I know you just from this call, I can tell your spirit is coming through the wire all the way across the country, and it's going to be going out to a lot of people. So thank you for sharing your thoughts and being so courageous here today.
Thank you. No problem.
And now I turn my microphone off, and I just leave my headphones on, close my eyes, and let you both talk about whatever you want for the last few minutes of the show. Kevin, we're going to save you for last, if that's okay. And Stephen, please just share whatever it is that's on your mind.
Kevin, let's hope this is another step to get you out of prison. It's been a long, long road, but I won't give up, ever.
And Kevin, over to you.
I'm thankful, you know, and it's taking me a long time, but I'm at peace. Like I said, like last 5 years now, and my life now still has purpose and meaning despite what they've done. I hold no ill feelings towards nobody. It is what it is. They did what they did. All I've lost, I lost. My life, I was 24 years old, I'm 59 now, I'll be 60 next year. I've been clean over 5 years. So it's like, there's nothing else that I can't do because I don't control it. But I won't let what they've done to me back then do something to me now. I'm free, you know, inside, and I'm at peace. And even if I die in here, I'll be at peace knowing I stood for the truth, and for once, I did the right thing. As an adult, for my family. I wasn't always a criminal. When it came down to my life and death, I did do the right thing for once. Something my parents was proud of. There's nothing I can do but keep my mind focused on what's possible, what could be possible, and how to help others. It's a given opportunity. It's God, family, and my community, where I see it now. And I won't let nothing take that from me. That's all I have. And I appreciate everything that you guys are doing, and I appreciate some support from anybody, whether it's through the governor, whatever can be done to help me at least get the truth, the absolute truth in front of the people, and then let them decide again. Do I feel I need to be punished for what I did then? If they say so, because I pretended, but hey, I was worried for my life, scared for my life at the time. But I did what I believed being was the right thing, and I don't regret doing that.
Don't forget to give us a fantastic review wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps. And I'm a proud donor to the Innocence Project, and I really hope you'll join me in supporting this very important cause and helping to prevent future wrongful convictions. Go to innocenceproject.org to learn how to donate and get involved. I'd like to thank our production team, Connor Hall and Kevin Wardis. The music in the show is by 3-time Oscar-nominated composer Jay Ralph. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Wrongful Conviction and on Facebook at Wrongful Conviction Podcast. Wrongful Conviction with Jason Flom is a production of Lava for Good Podcasts in association with Signal Company Number 1.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.